Welcome, everybody, to another episode of Snowgoer Live, where we bring you some of the most interesting people and stories in the sport of snowmobiling. Today, we're joined by the legendary Steve Shearing. He's a former oval racer who launched the Shearing Speed Sport Snowcross team in 1998. Since then, Steve's team and its amazing black AMSOIL sleds have become a staple of the sport. His highly professional team has won multiple championships, earned more than 300 podium finishes, and also gives back to the sport in many different ways. He also owns and operates the Climb Compound, a highly professional practice track in northern Minnesota. Let's bring him in. And joining us now is Mr. Steve Shearing, live from, what is it, Gilbert, Minnesota up there?
It's actually Aurora, Minnesota. It's the recreation center of the range.
Yes, it most certainly is. Well, we really appreciate you taking the time today. You and I have done one of these discussions before. So for people that have, aren't maybe really familiar with how you got into this sport, from your oval racing beginning to how you got into snowcross and stuff, we'll link to that in the links below. So let's just jump right into, kind of more what's going on today. So, you started this super team, a little bit more than 25 years ago. What keeps you coming back? What's the appeal for Steve Shearing to keep rolling out that big black semi?
I'm still having fun, and everybody asks, when are you going to be done? I said, as soon as I stop having fun. We were at Hay Days last weekend, and to see that enthusiasm, It was exciting. There was a pile of people there. The place was full. It's just like your first day back to school, and just to hear some reinforcements, and this is obviously confidence, not ego talking, people saying, we sure appreciate what you do for the sport, allowing small drivers come up, younger drivers come up here and use our test track, and just, being a team based out of integrity. That felt really good to hear, and that goes a long ways.
I bet it does. Obviously, the sport has evolved a lot over the last quarter century. Things just evolve. What are some of the more impactful changes that you've seen in the sport since you started this team?
Well, we've all gone from the great Snowgoer magazine days to social media, which, it's thrust upon all of us, so we don't have a choice. If you look back, 1999, I was the first one to have my own website, and everybody's like, holy Schmidt, this guy's got her going on. Now, pretty much every team out there is a full-time photographer, a media person, and that's the buzz. So it's good and it's bad. It is what it is. It's like paying taxes. Everybody has to do it. Does it provide more exposure? Sure. But the level of importance that got put on that, it's just as important to have that person as a top mechanic now. And I have mixed feelings about that. I get it, but it is what it is, and that's part of the trend. Everything is, each year gets a little more professional, and the cool thing about having ISOC as a series promoter, the races are on time, they're professional, we have good live streaming, we have great TV, they have great media, so that makes it a lot easier, to showcase our team.
I'm sure it does. Snow Week magazine, may it rest in peace. I loved working for that magazine and covering the races and being in the infield. But yeah, it is amazing now that you can just plan on a Friday and Saturday night if you subscribe to Float, who just watch that show live and have really professional coverage, that you can see the whole thing laid out. It isn't, semifinals at midnight like we used to have at Duluth some years, where you're out there at all hours. Now it's planned, it's dedicated. You're going to have a professional program right before your eyes.
Right. And yeah, everything is instant results now. Everybody knows how you've done within 30 seconds of finishing. And I guess that's good.
Yeah, I think it is. The, I don't know what it is about our society. Maybe it's that internet you started with that first website. I don't know. But there's a certain sky is falling mentality sometimes that people have. And a line you said to me earlier this summer will stick with me, I think, forever, where you say, for 25 years, everybody says the sport is dying, yet every December we fire up the sleds and go racing. Why do you think there are doomsdayers? And how would you describe the current status of the sport?
I would give snowmobiling in general an A, and I would give the racing an A, whether it's snowcross or oval or drag racing or cross country. They're all great. I just think some people, they're not happy till you're not happy. And it drives me crazy. It's like, you know, last week there was a comment, they released the schedule, go to Velcord. I think that's a great idea. All the manufacturers think it's a great idea. There's 40,000 people there last year. It was a huge event. It's great for the sport. It's great for, you know, it's in Skidoo's backyard. And immediately people on the internet go, well, that's going to make a long ways for people to drive. Well, how about the people that live up there that are racing? It's not that far from them. And the fact that, you know what, we're in this business to race and have great events, it drives me crazy. It's like, as soon as, you know, as soon as something positive comes out, immediately somebody's picking fly shit out of pepper on it. And I hate that.
Yeah. I mean, you want to talk about coming a long ways. Heck, about half the pro class now is from Scandinavia. I don't think it matters a lot to them if they're on the East Coast or the West Coast. It's, you know, it's you follow the sport, and you're right. If there's a crowd, that's the most important thing. And just if I can go off on a little tangent now, for the folks who live in the East, if you've never been to the Grand Prix de Velcor, that is such a first class event. It's one of my all time favorites. Between the oval racing, the snow cross racing, all the different things they do there, that's a must see. But I'll get off my soapbox for now.
Okay. You better explain to some of these people what a soapbox is, because I got a feeling that half our crowd doesn't know idea what a soapbox is.
You know what? I don't think I've ever seen a soapbox for that matter. I don't know where that saying comes from, but that's neither here nor there. So there've been a lot of changes in the pro class this year. By my count, I think there's, 4 of the top 10 racers that are back with the same team they raced for last year, which is incredible when you think about it. But yet when you do the math and you add it all up, and now that the dust is settling a little bit, I think we're going to have more full-time pro racers this year than we did last year. I think we're adding 4 and subtracting 2. What do you think caused all the change, and do you think that will cause some challenges for some of these drivers who suddenly are racing for different teams?
Well, I think it's great that our pro number increased, and I talked to so many up and coming drivers, and it's their lifelong dream to run pro snowcross in the ISOC Championship Series. And I think there was a catalyst last year for people to jump up, because we were down in the numbers with injuries towards the end of the season. We had to run a triple crown format and to keep the racing exciting. So I think people saw an opportunity to move forward, and now is the time to take that leap. And it's great to see. And it seems like whenever a team or two leaves, a team or two shows up. So, you know, that number always stays there. And I'm guessing we're going to the first race with 16, 18 pros, which is a pretty encouraging number.
Yeah, I would absolutely agree.
Here's the tricky part about that whole deal. Everybody goes, we need 30 pros like Supercross. Well, you know what? Supercross has got 6 or 7 manufacturers, and if each one does 4 or 5 guys, that's why they have that number. We have 3. You know, if each one does 4 or 5, you know, then we're at that 15 to 18 number. That's, you're not going to change that.
Yeah, and realistic. Yeah, and realistically, the last couple of years, even Articat hasn't driven a lot of entries into the pro class. So it's really 2 brands that are carrying the bulk of that load.
Right. And I truly hope, you know, that Articat sticks with it. I mean, we need them. You know, they're a great company, and I just think it's good for everybody.
Yep. Now we just need a Lynx race team. Isn't that what we need?
Well, you never know what's down the corner.
Yeah, absolutely. So one of the teams that has changed slightly this year is a team called Shearing Speed Sports. You're racing with just 1 pro this year, and then 1 a pro light racer, but both pretty dang good, you know, good names and historic names in the sport. Tell us about what you got coming for this winter.
So what happened was Logan Christian retired at the end of the season, and great racer, great kid. At 31 years old, he decided, you know, I'm having a family and I want to move forward. Totally respect that. Yeah. And my goal is to create great racers and build a program. And it didn't make a lot of sense for me to hire, and I'm not profiling, but another pro that was, you know, on the twilight of his career and get a year or two out of him. Whereas I've been keeping my eye on Anson Shield for a few years, and I saw the talent he had. He's only 20 years old. You know, I know his dad very well from the Caterpillar side of it, as well as the racing side of it.
Okay.
And I looked at an opportunity for, you know what, we can keep him in pro light for a year and hopefully move him up to pro the following year, and they'll put us back in that 2 pro category. But I wanted to keep, you know, it's like, for sure, there's a ton of great racers from overseas. I want to keep our team an American team, you know, with AMSOIL and the Air Force and a lot of our other sponsors, I think it's in Skidoo. I mean, they want to see some American drivers. He lives close to here. He's got the work ethic. That, you know, it's like, I got to look at what do I think is best for my team and my other drivers. And I want to make sure whoever I get isn't a nut job that doesn't fit in with anybody else. You know, I mean, getting along, that's one of the keys to our success. I mean, because you know as well as I do how much we're on the road.
Absolutely. I mean, you have had quite a range of personalities on your team over the years. You know, after all those experiences, what do you look for in a racer, and what lessons have you learned about that over the years in terms of when you're trying to narrow down to a personality type and a work ethic type?
Well, I look for attitude. That's the first thing.
Yeah.
It's like willingness to work with other people, their willingness to learn. And now in our sport with running a stock race snowmobile, feedback from the driver is so important. You know, learning what the vehicle does. Suspension is a big area of our development. And we need a driver that will, if he doesn't know it, at least say, I don't know, but I want to learn about it. I don't want to see a driver come on our team, come in from a practice run and sit down and look at his phone. That drives me crazy. I'd rather see him come in and talk to Elliot and Steve or myself. And like, every time I do this, this happens. So that's important, you know, and obviously the level of talent is there.
Yeah.
And it's hard to gauge talent on everybody because you don't know, were they on good equipment or are they on marginal equipment? And does that show up? Because, you know, we had one driver that we were struggling 1 year, probably 10 years ago, and said something to Steve, and he goes, I can really make you go slow if you want. You know, so it's like, it's the whole balance that you need. You know, we're going to have great vehicles with the mechanics and the team we have and the manufacturer. And hopefully this is a vessel for the driver to really shine.
Understood. The probably the best advice somebody would have for a young racer is, well, just win a bunch of races and you'll be noticed. But we, like you said, the equipment is so much a part of that and the prep and stuff like that. But so, you know, I guess, you know, like within the stick and ball sports, a lot of those guys will create a huddle reel or a huddle video of their highlights, and they'll use that to hype themselves when they're trying to, you know, land a scholarship at a college or something. What should a young motorsports or specifically a snowcross racer do to catch the attention of people like you or people like Skidoo or whatever? How, you know, if I'm 14, what do I got to do to someday make it to your team?
Pay your dues. Yeah. I mean, it's not somebody's going to hand you on a silver platter. That doesn't work. You know, my experience is the people that are a little bit more hungry because they have to create an income off this versus somebody that maybe it doesn't have to, you can see a little more hunger in that person. And, you know, that's a big thing. Make yourself noticed, you know, ask questions, and, you know, without being too annoying, learn. You know, I have a ton of people that come up to the climb compound every fall to test, and I can see some of these young kids that really want to become a great racer. You know, they'll ask for something very politely, and they'll embrace what we do. And it's just, you can kind of see where the cream of the crop is coming. You know, it doesn't mean they all make it, just like motocross or anything. It's like it gets narrow at the top. But you can kind of see a lot of these young kids that are putting in the work and the sacrifices that most of the time it's their mom and dad are making, you know, in the trailer, sleeping in the trailer, making sure, you know, their son or daughter's taken care of. It's cool to see, but you need to see that hunger too.
Yeah. Speaking of hunger, I've discussed this with other people, but I don't know if you and I have ever discussed it. Over the years, there's been some racers, including some extremely talented racers, who maybe get off to a bad start in a race, or something happens in the first lap, or they're a little bit back. And just standing beside the track, watching them, I can see that all of a sudden their heart isn't into it. I don't know if it's the way they carry their shoulders and their elbows or what it is, but sometimes you just see a guy isn't trying as hard as some of the other people on the track. And I've always appreciated the person who, the last three laps is still moving forward instead of moving backwards. Is that something you also kind of watch for?
You know, for sure. I noticed that. And I kind of, as like when I go golfing, if I have a bad first hole, I'm like, do I try to pick it up or do I go, well, I'll wait till next round? It's like, you got to dig for every point. You know, that's when you're chasing a championship. We won a championship by 4 points. We lost a championship by 4 points. You know, it's like, I try to tell everybody, get every single position you can out there. And even if you come from the back, ride as hard as you can and learn something. Learn about the vehicle. Because when you go slow and you're putting out there, two things are going to happen. You're setting yourself up for injury. Somebody might come over and jump and land on you. And the vehicle's not going to work because the vehicle's designed to work at high race speeds. So, yeah, that bugs me too. I'm not going to lie. This is such a mental game.
And it's amazing that sometimes it's some of the top names that you see doing that, but they just lose their mojo in the race, and you can watch them on the track and see that it's happening. So let's switch a little bit to what it's like to be a part of the traveling road show that is the Snowcross world. So, you know, people see the sleds flying through the air on a weekend and it's all exciting and glamorous and cool under the lights. But in terms of getting there, let's start preseason. When do you get your sleds? What do you do to the sleds? What's happening in, I don't know, October, November to start this whole shenanigan off?
So that's a two-part question, and I'll tell you kind of a time frame of where we're at now and what it's like traveling. So for us, let's just rewind back to May, June, July. All our clothing design has to be done by the 4th of July. So while everybody's else out partying on the 3rd of July, me and Dustin from Climb at 10 o'clock at night are making final changes on our clothing to hit the deadline. You know, so it's like, I always equate it to the Air Force. What do you do when you're not at war? You get ready for war. You know, so it's that. It's a lot of postmortems. What didn't work last year? What do we need to improve on? Obviously, driver contracts. If you don't have drivers under contract, sponsor contracts. You know, so all that leading up to, I mean, we're working on shock development all summer. We're working on ideas with Ski-Doo. They kind of keep us abreast, you know, what is going to be coming on the new vehicle. And it's just an ongoing communication. And then for me, also, I do the off-road racing in the summer too. So that on top of everything else is full. And then here's a part two of the whole thing about what's it like behind the scenes going to a race. I'll give you a perfect example. So last year at ERX, one of the things we do is Air Force school visits. We go to local school visits with the recruiter. We talk about technology. We bring the race transporter. We'll bring the drivers, the mechanic, the race vehicles. And it's a really cool deal. It's one of the Air Force's, you know, number one marketing assets to have. So we were at Andover, and then we were scheduled to go to Elk River right after that. Went to get in the truck, and the truck wouldn't start. And we're like, crap. You know, this is on Thursday before the race, and it's like, it's kind of a big deal when a big truck doesn't start. So long story short, I have to call a tow truck to tow me to the Volvo dealer in Minneapolis. Fortunately, I was in Minneapolis on Thursday rather than being in Quebec on Sunday night. So I'm in there, and I'm begging the guys in the service department because, you know, still a little bit of COVID hangover about everybody will get to it when we can. I'm like, guys, I got to get to the track. I got to do this. And so I sat there for 7 hours kind of making sure my sled was getting, or excuse me, my truck was getting ready so I could get to that track and park that night. In the meantime, while I'm in there, I must have saw six other team mechanics or owners coming in looking for an airbag or a spring or something for their all trucks that broke down. So that's the thing a lot of people don't see behind the scenes. There's a lot of things that don't always go good. I'm very fortunate we have very few breakdowns, but I mean, the starter went out, just an anomaly. And, you know, $2,800 later from between the tow truck and the repair bill and have it on Friday. So much of that goes on behind the scenes, and every team out there experiences it. There isn't a single one that does. Cause if you go to a race, ask how your trip was, and they'll go, oh, my airline blew in Floodwood and I had to call a guy and it took him 2 hours. That's a challenge, you know. And then we also have the weather in the winter. You know, that's sometimes an issue too. It could be super cold. It could be snowy. It could be rainy. And that's the worst. I just love driving down a freeway and dry pavement. I think that is the highlight of my winter.
That's also going to be one of the things that's nice about being having the off-road race team. You're not quite dealing with all the same elements, although, you know, I'm sure there's summer storms that come up, but it's not quite like what we all get to play with in the winter.
It is, and one of the big differences is my race trailer in the summer looks spotless all the time, and that poor salt in the wintertime just chews on our trailers, no matter how new or old they are. That is a challenge.
So let's go back to then the machine prep. When do you get the race sleds, and what's happening in the weeks from that race sled, from the time it arrives to the time you're putting it out on the test track? What do you guys tear it all the way down to the last bolt, and what are you looking for, and what are you doing with it?
No, it's a skidoo. All you have to do is put gas in it.
Yeah, exactly.
So our sleds will be arriving shortly. And, you know, we're prepared for that. We've already ordered parts. We've already come up with a program with Fox for the shocks, what we're going to do. Everything is kind of in place. And fortunately, you know, you saw the reveal as I did. There is some changes, but it's still not a huge difference in the platform. So we know what we're having. You know, we did a bunch of testing last spring, and we know what the new one's going to be. So that helps. I mean, I remember when we were with the Rev and we went from the ZX chassis or whatever it was to the Rev, it was like, it was a whole new everything.
Yeah.
You know, even though we spent some time building it. So as soon as they come, we'll take and take them out of the crates, pretty much strip them down. There's some reinforcing, you know, that can be done to them. A lot of spots, you know, that are weak, you got to kind of find some reinforcing in that. Obviously, you can't do anything to the motor. Just a lot of alignment, a lot of truing things up, a lot of reinforcing, making sure our shocks fit, because every year, if the suspension points change, the shock mounting's a little bit different. Those are big things. And then as soon as, like, we can usually make snow starting around Halloween up here. So usually around the 5th of November, my guys are pretty close out riding. And it seems like it takes 3 to 5 days, kind of blow the snot out, get the calluses on your hands before you can really start tuning anything. So that helps. And then once we get to the point where they're comfortable on the vehicle again, then it's like, okay, every time you go out there, I want you to try something different so that you know what happens when you do this. Or if this shows up at a race, you know what to do. And I'll say Hunter's fantastic. He's very good with feedback. He comes in and spends a lot of time talking to Elliot, Steve, and myself about, you know, what the vehicles are doing. You know, and then the whole flip side of the whole deal is, not only do I have to get the snowmobiles, I've got 2 groomers, 10 snow guns, pumps, and infrastructure that I have to make sure is ready for making snow, so that as soon as the weather gets down 26, 27 degrees, we're firing up on snow. So there's that whole dynamic of it. And, you know, and unfortunate, like, we're affiliated with Jeff Foster Trucking. He'll take care of our truck and trailer. So that's a big headache out of the way for me. But making sure the snowmaking is available and the groomers are ready, and because everything's got to fire on all the cylinders at this level.
A couple of years ago, I can't remember who the heck I was talking to, but they said something like, well, Shearing's lucky because he's got the test facility right at his place. And I said, do you have any idea what it probably takes to build that test facility and build the track every year? That's lucky. You know, everybody else just goes and pays their admission and shows up, you know, but somebody's got to build that track and groom that track and take care of all that. But that's another story altogether.
You know what? I'm fortunate that I have some really good guys that'll make snow. But there was a time when I would spend 7 days here and never leave. I'd never go home for 7 days because I wanted to make sure everything was working right. And it's like, well, everybody else was tucked in watching Walt Disney. It's 2 o'clock in the morning and we're making snow here. You know, so it's like, I've worked really hard for what I've got. And I appreciate that. But I'm very humble about the whole deal. And I say thank you for everything I got every day, because I know everybody's trying to take it from me. Mm-hmm. But this is a cool deal up here. And you know what? We treat every kid exactly the same, whether it's a 10-year-old or a seasoned veteran. We want to give everybody a chance. And, you know, just one of the reasons I do that with our track, because I remember going to Spear Mountain when I first started racing. Nobody had even been on a snowmobile yet.
Yeah.
You know, kids are getting hurt. They're not running good. They're losing interest. I'm like, we got to figure out some way to generate interest and make these kids more competitive at the first race. And it's made a huge difference.
I'm sure it has. From a racer's perspective, I mean, you know, it's easy to think that these people are, you know, training year round and this is their only life, but you know, they're human beings too. You know, do most racers, is it kind of like football players where from the 4th of July on, suddenly you're really kicking your training into high gear, and by the time they show up to you, they're in pretty good shape? Or how does that generally work for the racers?
So I can only speak for my team, but like, let's just take Hunter, for example. We'll finish our last race first week of April, second week of April. He'll take a week or two off, you know, just maybe take a little vacation. And then he's right back at it, because what he tells me and a lot of people, like, if you slack off for a couple months, you lose so much that it takes you those couple months to get back to where you were. So I don't want to say it's easier, because it's a lot of work. But if you can maintain that and then continue to strengthen that come the fall, you're going to be a lot better shape. You're not playing catch up. Because if you have to pay if you have to play catch up the first race, you are screwed.
Yeah.
And you can see the racers out there that are not in shape. You know, their heads are bobbing and it's hard. I mean, that I don't care what anybody says. I think snowcross is the hardest sport on the planet.
So the real key would be, you know, not becoming doughy like me. You got to actually stay in shape.
I don't think you're doughy at all, Doug.
Yeah, sure. You bet. So once the season gets rolling, so let's pretend you got to, you know, one of the back-to-back weeks here. So it's Saturday night. You've finished racing. The sleds are tucked in the trailer. What happens between leaving the track on Saturday and the next time it's racing again on the following Friday? What does that week look like for you and the team members?
So our team is a little unique compared to other teams because of our activations with the Air Force and people like that. Sure. So usually what we'll do is myself and if Tony's driving with me or somebody else, we'll leave Saturday night after the races and be home 3 o'clock in the morning, Sunday morning, if it's not too far away, or 5 o'clock in the morning. We'll get things unloaded and some things washed, maybe the truck and trailer washed and stuff, and then go home and sleep for a while. And then Monday morning, you know, my crew is back. We're tearing stuff apart. We're, you know, hopefully we weren't in a bunch of crashes because that definitely makes more work on the week. And then come Tuesday, Hunter and now this year Anthony will probably be out riding again, and they'll ride Tuesday, Wednesday, and then we'll leave either Wednesday night or Thursday, and then Friday morning we'll go do some school visits with the Air Force. We'll park Friday afternoon. Kind of just low key Friday evening. At least that's what they're telling me. And then race all day, either Friday and Saturday or Saturday and Sunday, depending on the event. If we're racing Friday and Saturday, we'll leave Wednesday night for Thursday morning school visits. If we're racing Saturday and Sunday, everything gets pushed back a day. I like two races together and a weekend off. I'm not a big fan when we have a 3 or 4 week break in between races. It's hard. You can only test so much and you can only ride so much. Just like you got to keep that energy going.
So you have had great relationships with a handful of sponsors that have been with you forever. And a lot of people look at that and think, boy, he's lucky. It's not luck. You know, I know you don't want to give away any trade secrets, but at the same time, what's involved in getting and keeping a sponsor in broad terms?
So this is maybe the easiest way to describe it. I remember when I was about 8 years old, I was in the woods and I found these huge strawberries. And I said to everybody, "Hey guys, look at all these strawberries." And by the time it was all said and done, I didn't have a single one. And at that point, you know, I learned to keep my mouth shut. And getting a sponsor, securing a sponsor and building sponsors, it's a lot of work. A lot of people don't want to put in the effort, and you have to be thick skinned. You have to learn the word no, because you get that a lot more than yes. And people think that sponsors are falling out of the woodworks because you show up with a trailer and stuff. That's at least for me, the farthest thing for the truth. The only time I've ever had anybody approach me about sponsorship was four guys at 11 o'clock at night that were drunk telling me they own the Home Depot. You know, that's as close as I've ever come to having somebody say, "Hey, we want to sponsor your team at a primary level." So it's a lot of work, you know, and it's like, the one thing I will say, it's like, I hear so many people, "We got to go do this for our sponsor." You don't have to go do anything. You should embrace that. You know what? Whether they're supporting you mentally, emotionally, financial, whatever, they're investing in you. So you should embrace that, because there's a whole bunch of people that wish they had that.
It was one of my neighbors. My kids are now to the point where they're no longer in school. But one of the neighbor kids came to my house. God, was it last winter or the winter before? My kids went to Armstrong High School, and he was all excited because some snowmobile race team had visited his school on a Thursday. And I said, "Were they black sleds?" He said, "Yeah. How do you know?" And I said, "I know exactly who that was." You know, that's I said, "There's only one team that really seems to put in the effort to visit schools, to spread the word, to spread, you know, the Air Force's word in this case." And so congratulations on, you know, having that impact all over, including right in my little neighborhood.
You know, and it's like, not always just the Air Force is like the coolest people work there. I mean, that's the best part about our partnership, is the people that are there. And it's not always about getting recruits to sign up or potential airmen. It's also about you know, inspiring kids and telling them, you know, hey, I came from a town of 1,300 people. I couldn't afford to go to college. I went to school for heavy equipment. This is what I've always wanted to do. And now I'm making my living on my dream job, you know, just to really 3D at that. This can happen if you put your mind to it. And it's amazing. You know, a lot of classes are real engaging and some of them are a little more reserved, but usually the ones that are reserved at on night, they'll light up on Facebook. Yeah, the AMSO Air Force Trace Team was here. Coolest thing ever. And they got a picture of the transporter or a picture with Hunter, you know, so it's really cool to see that. And like you say, you know, how someone else has been there or, you know, it's just neat. Brody Bosey, the guy that does our social media, he goes, yeah, I remember when you guys came to our high school. I was in 11th grade. I'm like, oh, my God, I'm dating myself.
Fabulous. And now Brody's a dad.
So, you know what? I work hard at what I have.
Yep. All right. So people tell me I should keep these. I could go on all day talking to folks like you, but that I should keep these podcasts short. So we'll do a quick speed round to wrap it up. Highest point in the history of your team.
Oh, I think the year we went 1-2-3 at Spear Mountain in the pro class. That was pretty cool. Nobody's ever matched that.
Yep. Okay. Most dedicated racer you've ever had.
Oh, that's a long list. You know what? Hunter's right there. Carl Schmitzy's right there. Robbie Malinowski's right there. There's a lot of them. You know, it's like that's a pretty long list. And hopefully Anson will be on that list this year too. There's a lot of them. So I can't give you a one on that one.
Okay.
LinkedIn, all of them are good.
The biggest personality you've ever had on your race team?
Chris Vincent.
Yeah, I suppose.
And I could tell you some pretty good stories off camera on that one.
I suppose we'll do it off camera. Favorite all-time event?
You know, for sure, I like Spear Mountain. You know, it's a hometown race for AMSOIL. I love Canterbury. I love that setting. I wish we had 8 Canterbury-style events that we could go to because, you know, it's like, there's like usually 5 really good events and there's maybe 3 okay events. And we're always trying, you know, I give Carl credit. He's always trying to, you know, make those 3 better, but it's such a challenge with location, weather, timing, all that. So I like New York, great fans out in New York. I like Velcourt, you know, it's a home base for us. And it's cool to see that passion from, you know, they're out there at 20 below drinking beer at 10 o'clock in the morning and they're fans. They want to see you race all day. It's neat to
Absolutely.
See.
Absolutely. So the thing you're most looking forward to this winter?
Championship. Same as every year. You know, it's what we quest for. And everybody knows, you know, it's harder each year than easier because the vehicles are so much easier. And you need to find that 3 or 4% that nobody else can find. We have a very solid team. You know, I have solid sponsors. So I really created a pattern of what needs to be done to go racing. And fortunately, you know, I'm at a point in my career where I don't have to, you know, knuckle under somebody says, oh, I want this, or if a driver wants to come, I want to do this. You know, if I was 21 and have to sell my soul to create a team, I might have ended up with a different driver, but I'm like, this is our team. This is the way we do it. I'm going to give you 100% of what I have all the time. And I expect the same from you.
We started out the interview with this question, but I'm going to ask you again, just given the background of all those big X's on the wall behind you and the word champion over your left shoulder and all that. Why do you keep doing it? And how long are you going to keep doing it?
So why I keep doing it, I'm having fun and I'm going to keep doing it until I stop having fun. When I'm not having fun doing this, then I'm going to quit. I'm very fortunate. You know, we have long-term sponsors and long-term employees. Obviously, we go for the championship every year. We're leading in the off-road series. We're leading the championship with one race left to go. So hopefully we can ring that bell next week in Oklahoma. It's just, I love the environment. Snowmobile racing in general is a cool, and I don't want to use the word family because that's so generic, but it's like everybody there is friends. Yeah. You know, for sure you have disputes on the track or off the, you know, sideline or whatever, but at the end of the day, everybody is willing to chip in and help. So I love it. I mean, what a cool deal.
So tell me, what's the worst part about being a snowcross team owner?
The worst thing about being an owner is you bring a driver on and he's in heaven on one of the best teams out there. And then somewhere down the line, the performance drops or age drops and you got to let him know. And then you go from being the hero to the biggest jerk out there. And I hate that. that's the one thing I hate. It's like, I don't do this because I'm disliking you. I'm doing this because, unfortunately, this is a performance-based business. And, you know, we all have to understand that we need to keep moving forward.
Well, my guest again has been Steve Shearing. And thank you, sir. The sport just wouldn't be the same without you. You know, all the effort and energy that your team brings is very appreciated, not just by people like me, but by your competitors as well. So keep up the good work, my friend.
Well, I appreciate your time.